When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the wizarding world right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardingcandles.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the mysteries behind Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 21, Hermione's Secret, live in Berkeley!
Man. Woo! Look at this guy.
You guys are way louder than Sacramento.
Way louder.
Don't get me started on Portland.
No, I know.
Portland was great. Portland was great.
All the Portlandites are watching this now. In the
I know.
Future.
They're like, hey, wait a minute.
Wait, what?
Wait a minute.
You said that about Seattle. Oh man!
No, we didn't.
I am so excited for this chapter. Though we have got the longest chapter in all of Prisoner of Azkaban.
Is that this one coming on the heels of the shortest one?
Coming on the heels of the shortest chapter. Yes, the previous chapter I believe was 7 pages. This one is 30.
It's a chonky boy. Yeah,
It's a chonky boy.
Yeah.
So, as per always, we have to take just a minute to discuss the chapter art here for Hermione's Secret, which I'm going to turn around and show to you guys.
Yeah, sure,
I'm sure you're all familiar with it. Does anybody have your books with you? Is anybody reading all? Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Man,
look at people reading books.
That's the point. Oh, you guys take like crazy person notes?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Ours are just absolutely dripping
in
extra notes and information.
Yeah.
But so we get a really kind of a fascinating depiction of the Time Turner.
It just looks like a boring old hourglass, if you ask me.
Oh, you don't like it?
It looks fine. It just, to me, looks very... This is a case where I think the movie actually did it way better.
I don't disagree with that. Yes. I think I saw at least one person wearing the Time Turner necklace tonight. Is that a fact? Someone in here?
Nobody.
Yeah,
boom,
yeah,
right there.
There we go.
Crushing
boom, look
it.
At you go. I saw it. It looks good. But yeah, the prop design in the film is amazing. I think it does a really good job of doing like the flips. Like it makes a lot of sense in the film prop versus what I imagine. This is almost like the sand. Like you'd have to tip it over like one.
I know. Wait.
Two.
Yeah, I know.
And three.
I know. No one sees Hermione doing that all year long.
I know. Yeah. It also seems like you'd be liable, like if you, because there must be like an amount of pause in between each turn,
right?
You know, where it's almost like you're like one, two, and then you like immediately jump. And you're like, no, I needed three.
Ah, oh, too bad. Now you're back in time. You're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
No good. No
Too
good.
Too many hours back.
Anyway, though, so yeah, that's gonna be our chapter art for today. Jay, not a big fan. I think it's good.
I mean, it looks good. I just think it could, like, it doesn't make sense to me how you're flipping it over unless you're like waiting for it.
I think that's what you have to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's All a waiting right. game, but you know, it's time. It's time. But there we go. So where we left off, though. So this is kind of important because the folks here haven't been able to hear our latest episode because they're not all live yet.
Yeah.
So
they weren't in Sacramento.
And they, well, yeah, was anybody in Sacramento?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't blame you.
Oh, wait, one. Yes, you.
Goodness gracious.
You're right on track.
Wow.
You know exactly where we're at.
But yeah, where we last were, it was the Dementor's Kiss, where basically we would have seen, you know, the scene where, in Harry's timeline, in true timeline,
yeah.
Obviously all the Dementors swarm around the lake. Harry, Sirius, and Hermione all go down at once. Harry's unable to perform the Patronus, as far as he knows.
Right.
And then suddenly all the Dementors disperse.
Go away. He has seen somebody across the lake. Who could it be?
Who could it be?
And then he passes out. End of chapter. That's where we are.
Boom. That's there where we are. So we're picking up with a rather hilarious couple pieces of dialogue from Fudge.
From Fudge. Yeah, he just opens it. Shocking business. Shocking. Miracle none of them died. Never heard anything like it. By thunder. It was lucky you were there, Snape. Yeah. It is a miracle none of them died, though, because like Lupin is literally chained to Peter and Ron when he transforms.
I know.
And misses them both. Snape floating in midair like a balloon, who Lupin hates, just also misses him somehow.
I know, yeah. You know? It's amazing that Lupin transforms into a werewolf and immediately goes to battle with literally his last remaining best friend.
Yeah.
Instead of attacking his arch nemesis, who is just, like,
out to get him.
Available.
Available. Right yeah. there.
Right.
I know, right? Like, Snape's all concerned that, like, oh, they almost killed me when I was 16. They sent me down that tunnel. I'm like, Snape, you had nothing to worry about, bro.
Yeah,
you're like Lupin's got terrible aim. You were right there.
Right, you know? Right. James is the one that would have been hit.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, that's what would have happened. Yeah. They said Snape down runs right past him. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So then Fudge continues with one of my other just favorite lines from the entire chapter where he goes, Order of Merlin, second class, I'd say. First class, if I can wangle it.
Dude, like, does it say wangle?
Wangle it.
Wait, oh, I thought it said wrangle. I am seeing it. Wangle it. Okay, wow.
I mean, is it a wangle word? It? Is it a word or a typo?
I don't know. I would have thought, like, if you're, this has got to be an English thing, because then, like, or like a British thing, because in America, I feel like you would say wrangle it, but it says wangle.
Just to confirm, does anybody else have their book open? Does it in fact say wangle?
It's wangle.
It's wangle. Why not?
All right.
Why not? Yeah.
Well, there you go. Fudge is wangling things.
Yes, indeed.
Snape's got to be loving this. I also don't like Fudge is like first class if I can wangle it, and like what do you mean if you can do it? You're the Minister of Magic, like. Is it not up to you? Or
I know this. There's a couple of instances in this chapter, and this is one of them where this is like one of these situations where it's going to come up where somebody's like, hey, like there's nothing I can do, and it's like I think there is.
Yeah.
You might have control, so we'll come back to that. The other one's going to be Dumbledore here in a few minutes. But so then as we scoot forward just a little bit, we get reference from Fudge to Snape about the cut that Snape endured inside of the Shrieking Shack when Harry, Ron, and Hermione all simultaneously Expelliarmused him,
mm-hmm.
and Fudge is like, nasty cut you got there, Black's work, I suppose. And this is kind of interesting because I feel like Snape has got a very odd position throughout the rest of this chapter.
He does.
Like because we know that he doesn't like Sirius
right.
at all. But it's like we talk a little bit in the previous chapter where like as soon as Peter is transformed from rat into man, he is like alarmingly quick on his feet. So I don't like to give Peter a whole lot of credit for anything,
yeah.
but the speed at which he is able to like come up with like a backstory and use the limited pieces of information that the other people in the room don't have at their disposal against them to like build defenses.
Yeah.
I mean, he's all after it.
Oh yeah, he's fast.
But then in this particular situation, Snape, I think, is just like, lying.
He's just, that is literally what I wrote. I said, this is a straight up lie.
Yes. So basically he says, he's asking about, Fudge is asking Snape about the cut, and Snape is like, Black had bewitched them. I saw it immediately. A confundish charm to judge by their behavior. And it's like, Nope,
that's not what happened.
And oddly, it's like,
and first, like, I don't believe that's what Snape believes either.
Oh no, not in the slightest. So in this case, it's like what Snape is doing though is he's building a fantastic situation for everybody else involved in terms of interpreting what happens next, because he's basically saying anything they say, we can't trust because they've been confounded. So yes. Anything that they think happened probably didn't happen.
Yeah.
So he's, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's like put a nail in the coffin on Sirius.
He's really doing a good number on it. And then he says, this is sneaky by him too. He just says they weren't responsible for their actions. So like on the one hand, he's like semi-vouching for them. He's like, I understand. You can't hold them responsible for this. But what he's really doing is vouching for them so that he can try and like slam dunk on them in his next bit of argument.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You say on the one hand, he's like, they weren't responsible. Then the text actually says, On the other hand,
yeah.
Their interference might have permitted Black to escape. They obviously thought that they were going to catch Black single-handed. They've gotten away with a great deal before. I'm afraid it's given them a rather high opinion of themselves.
Oh, I know. Several points here. One, they've gotten away with a great deal before now. Like, first of all, what are you referencing? Like, the Sorcerer's Stone? Like the Chamber of Secrets? Like, are you upset about it? Or
yeah, they've gotten away with a great deal of saving the day.
I know. Yeah. Like, what have they gotten away with that you're so upset of? And two, let's see, they've gotten away with it. I'm afraid it's given them a rather high opinion of themselves, which, like, one, it's a well-learned high opinion, and two, they do not have that opinion of themselves.
Not even in the slightest.
Not even at all.
Yeah, yeah. And this is even kind of a funny one, too, because Snape is going to go on to be just a complete and total hypocrite.
Yeah.
Where he's like, Potter has always been allowed an extraordinary amount of license by the headmaster, and then Fudge is kind of like, yeah, well, Snape, it's Harry Potter. Like,
yeah, come on.
We've all got a bit of a blind spot where he's concerned.
Which is just eventual verbal irony for Fudge.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
He was meant like blind spot to spotlight.
Yes.
Eventually.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, he won 80s on this position pretty quickly.
Pretty quick. Yeah.
But then Snape's like, I try and treat him like any other student. And it's like, no, you do not.
False.
Wrong. And any other student would be suspended at the very least. So this is another one of those things that I feel like I've brought up so much between books 1 through 3. And I think it's finally about to expire. But this idea of expulsion or suspension or removal is this like bizarre, otherwise looming threat. Like,
yeah.
As much as we're always worried about like Voldemort arriving and like, you know, potentially wanting to attack Harry, it feels like more often than not the real threat Harry's up against is being expelled.
It's just being expelled.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not this time. And then he goes on to list some of his offenses just after other, you know, out of bounds at night, consorting with the werewolf, which I'm like, that's an interesting crime to put against Harry because Harry's not supposed to have known that he was a werewolf. So, right? What do you want, like, near a werewolf?
Right, yeah. Right, yes. It's like, if anything, Snape, you're the one who's been consorting with a werewolf because you're the one who's been making the Wolfsbane potion all year. Harry only found out he was a werewolf, like, an hour ago,
yeah.
So he's barely been consorting. And also, I mean, as like, with many characters in the story, I mean, like, and it's not just Snape. I mean, I think we get it from Ron a little bit as well in a couple of chapters ago. But the prejudice against werewolves is pretty massive.
It is pretty massive. I mean, the prejudice is just big in the whole series.
It's true.
But then I also love that he tacks on, and I have reason to believe he's been visiting Hogsmeade illegally, too. dude, like, he may as well have been like, and he has unpaid parking tickets. Dude, who cares? Like, that is not at the same level as the other things.
Right, yes, you know? Yes. No, I know. This one, you're exactly right. This reminds me so much of, again, a couple of chapters ago where Sirius is trying to explain, no, Lupin is trying to explain to Sirius, like, why Harry and Ron need to know. And he's like, Harry, think about it. His whole life, he's parentless because of this. And also, Ron had Scabbers as a pet. And
yeah,
it's like,
right. Like, yeah, less relevant.
Harry's reason is a lot more important.
A lot more important here. Yeah. Yeah. Fortunately, I guess for Harry, Fudge just sort of like brushes it aside. He's like, we'll see. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll put a pin on that one, Snape.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah, it's very much. We'll circle back on this.
We'll circle back
on
that.
That's like email jargon.
Yeah. He may as well just be winking at Harry like, it's fine. You're good. Don't worry. Let's see. And then I love the description of how Harry is hearing this. Just the words he was hearing seem to be traveling very slowly to his ears, to his brain. So that's difficult to understand. Because, like, I've had that feeling before where you're, like, hearing, like, as if through underwater coming out of a something.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But this is like another set of circumstances that I feel like happens quite often. Like, the hospital wing as a setting feels... like, it frequently ends up being a place where information is passed.
Yeah.
Like, it's as if... because this will happen again in Goblet of Fire after he, like, comes back from the whole situation and Dumbledore and Fudge are also having an argument just outside the hospital wing door.
Oh, they love to argue right in front of Harry so we can overhear things.
Exactly.
It happens in Chamber of Secrets when... Colin is delivered to the hospital wing.
You're right.
Bringing him grapes.
Yes, grapes in the middle of the night. Which somebody has explained to us that apparently in like, you know, like Britain, it's not uncommon to bring grapes to people who have fallen ill. So as much as we made like a big deal about that, that might actually be more of
just
like
more of a thing.
It might just be a thing. Yeah.
Well, good for Colin.
But we thought it was hilarious either way.
It's still kind of funny. Where'd he get the grapes? That's the other thing. He had to get the grapes somewhere.
Yeah. He must have gone and, you know, down to the kitchens.
Down to the kitchens. Like what adventures is Colin going on where he knows how to get to the kitchens?
Right?
Yeah.
Colin and Dennis are making like their own like comic book sans version of the Marauders map.
Yeah. I love it.
Yes.
The untold Hogwarts stories.
Yes. Oh man, that would be so great.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so here we go. Then Fudge brings up a pretty good point. He says, what amazes me most is the behavior of the Dementors. You've really no idea what made them retreat, Snape. This also seems like Snape must be lying. Like, how does he not see the Patronus? Like, he arrives almost immediately after Harry, it, like, comes back to him. And, like, it would have been so bright. Like, Snape has got to be on the move.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Also, what else could have driven the Dementors back? Like, we know Snape knows how to cast a Patronus. Like, this is the only known way to get rid of them.
Right.
Like, why aren't they wondering who cast a Patronus?
Right. It's like, can we think of nothing? It's like, is there one known way to get rid of Dementors? Could it have been that thing? No idea.
They just retreated.
Sure. Yeah.
For fun.
This actually does feel like a good... for fun.
They got bored.
Yeah. Couple of fun notes that I feel like we stumbled upon last night as well that I feel like would be a good thing to bring up at this particular point. So one of them is that if you've ever wondered sort of like to yourself, like, why do the Dementors all of a sudden like swarm the castle grounds?
Yeah.
Like after the Quidditch match where they've like come on, Dumbledore's made it pretty darn crystal clear. It's like, yo, you guys are not allowed back on premises, right? So it's like, what is it about this particular situation? Because like even when Sirius is in Azkaban, you kind of have a situation where like he's not being completely impacted by the effects of the Dementors.
Yeah.
And like to the point where he's able to literally like slip past them.
Yeah, well, he says it's because he knew he was innocent and like that's what he could keep telling himself. And it, like, kept him sane, but it wasn't a happy thought, so they couldn't prey on it.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. But the thing we stumbled across last night is that, like, literally as they are exiting the tree, like, Sirius and Harry are having the conversation where Sirius is like, I'm your godfather, you know? And he's like, and because of that, that means, you know, I could look after you if you would like to come and live with me. And Harry's like, are you insane? To which he probably like made serious like, I don't know, am I? Do you know this is a bad idea? Like, I don't know, is that not good?
What?
And then he's like, of course I want to live with you. Have you got a house? And it's this like absolutely amazing moment for Sirius and Harry. And what I think happens here is that Sirius, for the first time since James has died, is happy.
Yeah.
And so as he steps out from underneath the Whomping Willow, he is radiating like a beacon.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the Dementors are like, whoa, that's the signal.
That's some happiness right there.
We know that one.
I mean, it literally says, Sirius' gaunt face broke into the first true mile Harry had seen upon it. The difference it made was startling, as though a person 10 years younger were shining through the starved mask. For a moment, he was recognizable as the man who had laughed at Harry's parents' wedding. So it, like, is such extreme happiness that the Dementors are like, hello, what's this in the middle
feast.
Of the night?
Yeah, we are starving over
then,
here.
Then they get there and they're like, oh my God, it's him. This is amazing.
I know. Yes.
And he brought friends.
Delicious. Delicious. And one of them is just as happy as the other.
Yay.
That would be Harry.
Does that one have two souls?
Ooh.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. But anyway, so one way or another, though, Snape is like, nope, no idea. By the time I got there, all the Dementors had gone back to their posts.
Gone. Yeah, they just returned back to their posts. I love that, too. They get chased away, and they're like, guess we'll just go back to work. Never mind. Whatever.
What do you think they talk about?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They must be getting pretty bored.
Must be.
You know, they've done literally nothing for like a whole year.
It's been a tough go.
Yeah.
It's been a tough go.
Yep. Let's see. Moving down here. So Harry moved his head over the pillow, and the right lay Hermione, moonlight falling across her head. Her eyes were open too. She looked petrified, which I just made a note, like not like basilisk petrified.
Just afraid, petrified.
Right.
But we do know what Hermione looking petrified looks like.
Exactly.
So we can only assume it's an accurate description.
Right. So there's there. And then I love this scene too. How was that, Ben?
Probably.
That's it. Oh, man. So Madame Pomfrey comes in carrying the largest block of chocolate Harry's ever seen in his life. And I just love this visual. It's like a small boulder of chocolate. Because what it means is that at any given moment, she has that boulder.
She does.
She's just got it in her office, you know. She's ready for this. She's like, time for some chocolate. Get the boulder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I highlighted that. And yeah, I wrote, I like that boulder. That is a nice boulder.
That is a nice boulder.
Shrek reference. Jokes are best when explained.
Exactly, yeah. That's how people get them, yeah.
Madame
Pomfrey comes in, does her favorite thing in the world, which is insist that everybody leave, which I think is like her main character trait. More than even healing people, she's like, people need to be away from here. I don't want people in here.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. People do not heal better when surrounded by loved ones.
Nope, yeah. Get them out.
Yeah.
They got to be sleeping. Yep. Oh, you'll be staying here until I'm satisfied with you. It's like, nope. Not even close. Harry is straight awake. I need to see the headmaster. Straight to business. And Madame Pomfrey, very open with him. And she's like, oh, don't worry. They've got Black. He's locked away upstairs. They'll be performing the kiss any moment now. To which, a moment of surprise, she's not, like, disturbed by it at all. She's just like, yeah, regular thing happening.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I'm like, it's both her tone to where she's just like, not to worry, Harry. It's going to be totally fine. Someone's basically going to be murdered upstairs in a moment.
Yeah.
It's also like, why? Would she disclose this?
Do we have the pages up there? Yeah. Well.
Goodness gracious.
My goodness.
About that? That's a first. We didn't play that.
Shout out, yeah.
There we go.
That's fun.
Yeah, so I think that's like a really, like, yeah, it's like it's, I guess it's information that Harry needs to know, maybe, yeah, for the purposes of the story, taking its next step, because Harry's response is, what?
Yeah, he is straight out of bed. Now Hermione, who has been pretending to be petrified.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No. Now she's breaking that act. She is out of bed as too. And then I love how Fudge barges in. He's like, Harry, what's this? You should be in bed. Has he had any chocolate? Which, one, I can't believe Fudge knows the remedy.
I know.
I'm like a little impressed because he's so bumbling all the time.
I literally highlighted it and I said, Fudge isn't completely clueless.
I know. Yeah. He knows about the chocolate. A man named Fudge.
Yeah, that's true. You know. That's true.
Of course he knows about chocolate.
The first thing you learn in Fudge school.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the House of Fudge.
The House of Fudge.
The House
yes.
of Fudge. But I love how concerned he is with Harry. Like, he's upset with Harry for getting out of bed. Like he cares at all.
Yeah, yeah. But then Harry is immediately like, Minister, listen! Sirius Black's innocent! Peter Pettigrew faked his own death. We saw him tonight. You can't let the Dementors do the thing to Sirius. He's But Fudge was shaking his head with a small smile on his face, to which I was like, man, Fudge, I was just giving you credit.
Just giving you credit,
You
man.
Made it two lines.
I know. Like, can you imagine if he just listened to him? Like,
I know.
So much could have been avoided.
Right, right.
Yep.
But again, this goes back to Snape's, like, yeah, they've all been confounded.
I know.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, so this is Snape's words taking effect here. He's just like, no, Harry, you're confused. Lie back down. We've got it. We're good. And Harry is just not having it. He's just screaming. This would be like if you just like met the president and were just like screaming at them.
Can you imagine? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, honestly, but yeah, Harry's definitely, he's a man on a mission.
Yeah.
In this particular moment.
Yep. He is a man on a mission. He is not going to be deterred. And they're not doing, they're kind of like jump. There's like so much information they need to explain. They can't really land on anything. It's like, it was Ron's rat. He was an Animagus Pettigrew. I mean, and just like, yeah, of course they're hearing it. Just like, yeah, you sound crazy. I think you're crazy. I'm not listening to you. So it's like, it makes you wonder, like, if Snape had not had a chance to talk to him, if they just woke up and he's just hearing this from Harry and Hermione the first time, like, how different, like, would it go any different?
It's a good question. Like, would it be any more compelling at all? And, like, is there a world where it's sort of like, because, like, when Lupin basically hears, you know, like, when he's starting to get, like, the other pieces of the puzzle, everything clicks into motion for him all at once.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of like, oh, unless you switched.
Right.
And if you switched, wait, you know. But of course, it's hard to know whether or not Fudge would have had as much information as Lupin would.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. He wasn't like in the order or anything.
I don't tend to think that Fudge would be useful, even under the best of circumstances.
I know. It seems like he'd still mumble it some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Madame Pomfrey returns to continue to insist that everybody leave. Which I swear is all she does.
But, Potter is my patient. He should not be distressed.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, I'm not distressed.
Yeah. Like, that's like when people are like, I'm fine. It's like, yeah. Like, I'm not distressed. Yeah.
You seem a little distressed.
You seem a little distressed, Harry. Maybe you need to lie down, have some chocolate. And I love this. He actually just stuffs the chocolate straight in his mouth, just like, Potter, psh.
I know. This is almost where, like, what we really need is, like, an animated version of the series just so we can have this scene.
I know, right?
Because I imagine just the comically large boulder of chocolate just being,
right in his mouth. Yeah. So he's sort of choking on that, like, so he doesn't get to get up whatever his next point is going to be. But let's see. And then, what is it? Dumbledore shows up. Harry manages to, it's like this to Harry is like a sigh of relief for, like, a second. Because he's like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Dumbledore's going to be able to clear all of this up. Not going to be a problem. And Madame Pomfrey is not happy that Dumbledore's there. She's like, is this a hospital wing or not? You have got to leave, everybody. How are people supposed to be healing in here? Which, like, what are they even healing from? Like, you know?
I know, yeah. It's like, I mean, for the most part, like, they haven't endured any... I mean, hundreds of Dementors. I mean, it doesn't sound like a walk in the park or anything like that. But, like, also, you know... It's not like a lengthy recovery.
I know. And it's like they do, in fact, stand up and go on quite an adventure here in like a couple minutes.
Yes,
so it's
yes,
like
they do.
They're pretty okay.
But yeah. I love Dumbledore's response. He says, my apologies, Poppy, but I need a word with Mr. Potter and Mrs. Granger, said Dumbledore calmly. Oh, wait. So hang on. Let me try it again. My apologies, Poppy, but I need a word with Mr. Potter and Mrs. Granger.
Good. Very nice. Very calm voice you had there. Yeah.
Said Dumbledore calmly.
Oh, man. So he says, I've just been talking to Sirius Black. And, okay, so I have to think someone in the crowd here, because, like, Dumbledore goes up and talks to Sirius, and, like, he clearly just believes him about all the stuff with Pettigrew and stuff. Like, maybe he was a little closer being in the order and whatnot. But, like, to me, I was like, what makes him believe him? Because he's about to lay out Snape's arguments versus, like, Harry's arguments. And, like, he's like, Snape seem a lot more convincing.
Yes.
And Sirius has not acted innocent. And yet, Dumbledore does believe him.
He does.
Right? So, here's what I think, because we sort of brought this up earlier, is that, like, Sirius, he keeps having those super vague answers all the time, like, you know, it may as well have been me. I killed them. And it's like, no, you didn't, dude.
Right.
But, like, the fact is, he blames himself so severely for their death that he may as well have, even though he didn't. And Dumbledore has an extremely similar situation going on in his own past with Ariana.
No. Where him and Abraham. He may as well have.
Right. Because Dumbledore is like, I never knew which one of us cast the spell that killed her. But like, as far as he's concerned, it doesn't matter who cast the spell. It's his fault. Right?
Dang it.
Yes. So I think he's up there listening to Sirius and he's like, yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Been there. And it's like, it would be such a complicated kind of lie to tell.
Yeah.
It's such layers of depth to be able to like witness on Sirius's face that he's wearing the full burden of their death.
Yeah.
But it's like the way in which he's wearing it isn't through the lens of betrayal.
Right.
You know, and it's like that's too convoluted to be faking.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's really good, because me and you have been talking a lot, like what is the tipping point for Dumbledore in this situation? Because you're exactly right. Like there's a big situation that's going to unfold where Dumbledore is talking to Harry and Hermione, and he is going through and he's just kind of like, you know, this all doesn't, like, it doesn't look good.
Doesn't look good.
You know, like, he came in, he slashed the fat lady, he broke into Gryffindor Tower with a knife, you know. Like, the way he phrases things is incredibly vague and unclear.
Very unhelpful. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like it is like one of those things where it's like you want Dumbledore to know the truth, because you want Dumbledore to kind of be this like omniscient character who kind of like always sees through everything. But I love this interpretation. I think that's spot on.
Well, thank you. Yes. So who do we meet first in the meet and greet? Right there. I want to say yes. When I was talking to you. Yes, I told you I was going to call you out. This was for that, because we were talking and I was like, all of that clicked into place. So thank you. Thank you for our conversation earlier. Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to be on YouTube.
Woo!
I promise we'll do questions after.
Oh, occlumency.
Occlumency. Well, there is also that going on. Yeah, it's like, I mean, in both occlumency and Veritaserum are things that feel like they could have been useful at different stages.
Yeah, you know, it does like, seem like they could have just gone up and like given black Veritaserum.
Yes. Or even like when Harry returns, you know, from like Goblet of Fire and like Fudge doesn't believe him. It's like Dumbledore in that situation could have been like, I mean, we could give him Veritaserum if you want. Like,
you can do it.
You know, it's like he will tell us the truth.
Yeah.
And
it's like, this is where like you can even see like truth potions are only as useful. They're not infallible, because as long as you believe what you're saying is the truth, that's what you'll say.
I guess that's true. So if you're confunded,
that's your truth.
You still think it's
your truth. You still think it's the truth, so you're not lying.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So either way, there we go. Anyway, let's see. Moving on down here. Snape is concerned that Dumbledore is going to believe him. And I love that, like, Dumbledore is, like, surveying... It says, Dumbledore is surveying Snape closely through his half-moon spectacles. And I love this. I love that line, because you can tell Dumbledore is, like, looking at Snape and is like, I really don't know if you are just trying to be mean to Sirius or if what you're saying is true. Like, where are your motivations right now, Snape?
And that's a good question, because it's not clear to me where Snape's motivations are. Like, because like as time will go on, and I feel like the ultimate reveal that like what Snape had always cared about the most was Lily, and then ultimately like the promise to protect Lily's son.
Right.
Like, as this particular conversation plays out, like, I don't know that I'm buying that's his motivation in this particular moment.
No, I don't think
it is. I think he's much more heavily motivated by his hatred towards Sirius.
Absolutely. I agree. And then, like, Hermione tries to speak up and, like, say, you didn't arrive in time to hear or see Peter show up. Then he is just like, Miss Granger, hold your tongue. Which, like, in the last chapter, or maybe two ago, he's, like, calling her a, like, stupid girl.
Yes.
Like, I think earlier in this year? When, like, I can't believe how often he is really mean to Hermione.
He is.
Like, he does the thing with the teeth in Goblet of Fire.
Yep.
Which is, like, horribly mean. And then, like, when he asks the question and she's, like, has the answer and then he gets mad at her for it. It's like, it never really stood out to me much, like, how frequent it is directed at Hermione in particular.
That's a pretty, like, bad bias coming from Snape, who doesn't have a good history with throwing around the term mudblood.
It does not, yeah. Right.
So... but yeah, it also surprises me that Snape gets this intense with Hermione in front of Dumbledore.
Oh, I know.
Like, it almost surprises me a little bit that, like, Fudge does interject here, and he's like, now, Snape, the young lady is disturbed in her mind. We must make allowances. I'm kind of surprised here that Dumbledore's not stepping in and being like, hey, Snape, you can't talk to my students.
You can't talk
like
to
that.
Them. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like in Order of the Phoenix, when, like, Umbridge threatens, like, some kind of violence to the students, he's like, whoa, now.
Yeah, yeah, it's like,
we will have none. I will be polite and courteous and passive-aggressive all day, but if you're going to get... If you're gonna get really physical, we're gonna exchange blows.
Yeah. Wands are coming
Wands
out.
Wands are coming out.
And I'm not losing.
Yeah, that's right. Good luck. Yeah. So I'm surprised he doesn't speak up either.
Yeah. But so now is when Dumbledore specifically asks to speak to Harry and Hermione alone, and so he's basically dismissing Cornelius, Severus, and Poppy from her own hospital wing.
Pretty powerful to just to dismiss the Minister of Magic, be like, all right, please give me the room here.
You shall now scamper.
Yeah.
Yes. And so he says, this cannot wait. I must insist. And then Snape sort of steps in and he's sort of like, you don't believe it, do you? And let's see here. What does he say?
He says, you surely don't believe a word of Black's story, Snape whispered, his eyes fixed on Dumbledore's face. Which to me makes it sound like he's almost asking like for a favor here. He's like, seriously. Do me a solid and just, like, don't believe him.
Yeah. Let me have this one.
Like, you gotta get... Are you kidding me? You're not gonna give me this one? Right. You're not giving me this one? Like, he tried to kill me.
Don't you remember that
Back when I was 16?
He's totally... He's being so schoolboy petty.
He's like, you owe me this one, basically, I think is what he's saying.
Well, I mean, I guess in that particular moment, Snape could sort of be like, look, you allowed Lupin to come to school. You're the one who built the Whomping Willow. You're the one who made James Potter feel so cool all the time.
Right.
You know? And now this. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's still not going to get his way.
No, he sure
is. But anyway, so he dismisses Snape. Kind of just doesn't give him much of an answer at all. Let's see. And just basically tells him his memory is as good as it ever was. Let's see.
Yeah, so then basically everybody leaves, and then Harry and Hermione both at once are like, okay, here's what's going on. Professor Black's telling the truth. We saw Pettigrew. And, you know, then they've got the whole line. He escaped. Professor Lupin turned into a werewolf. He's a rat. Pettigrew's from Paul. I mean, Fecker, he cut it off. Pettigrew attacked Ron. It wasn't serious. So it just, they're definitely dumping a ton of information all at once.
Yeah, drinking from a fire hose for sure. But now Dumbledore is just like, yeah, that's all great. I know all that now. And he's like, here, we do not have much time here. There is not a shred of proof to support Black's story except your word. And it's like interesting. Like, he's really, like, at this point, they don't have much time. Because, like, as long as they go back before Sirius is, like, given the Dementor's kiss, they will have time. But if they turn the time turner back after it happens, it won't matter.
It won't matter because it's always happened.
Because it's always happened.
Right. And that's like, one of the big laws that we always have to keep in the back of our mind when it comes to anything related to Harry Potter time travel.
Yeah.
Is that is and those are... the rules. So I think that's another one that I think we can come back to here in a few minutes once we're in the reverse time.
Right.
Let's see here. He does point out as well that Professor Lupin is deep in the forest. He's unable to help anybody with anything, and he might add the fact that werewolves are so mistrusted by most of our kind that his support will count for very little. And Harry's still trying to interject, and Dumbledore's just like, it's too late, do you understand? And this is tough for Harry, I think, because I think he's sort of always operated under the assumption that, like, Dumbledore can solve all issues.
Right. It says he'd expected Dumbledore to pull some amazing solution out of thin air, but no, their last hope was gone. But I'm also trying to think, like, what in particular has Dumbledore done for Harry thus far where he has just sort of, like, swept everything aside for him and, like, been like, nah, it's good.
Well, I know. I mean, I guess I thought about the same thing, but, like, in the chamber with Quirrell, he does show up right at the last minute.
I guess
minute.
That's,
like,
true.
And then it is, like, Harry's faith in Dumbledore in Chamber of Secrets that sends Fox down.
Okay,
so I think even though Dumbledore's not coming in and, like, you know, waving his wand necessarily, unless it's, you know, like the end of year for the House Cup, in which case he's like, math, Harry wins.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's kind of like these other sort of, like, versions of Dumbledore
right,
coming in to make sure
helping
it's okay.
Out.
Although he does say that, "I have no power to make other men see the truth or to overrule the Minister of Magic," to which I was kind of like, I mean, he is the chief warlock on the Wizengamot, so right. It's like...
Aren't you like sort of like King Wizard guy?
Yes, yeah. Yes. At the very least, I feel like Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them led us to believe that being in this position makes you like Wizard King.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it does seem like maybe he would have some power. But it's also just very good setup for like Order of the Phoenix when all of the ministry is going to be against Dumbledore and Harry. Because like what he's basically saying is like, it really doesn't even matter if we have the truth because the truth won't matter.
Right.
Like it's just going to be the version of events that they want it to be. And that's what's going to happen. And it's like, it's so frustrating because like, no, but we have the truth. Like we know exactly what happened. Like it's... Like, and that's what's going to be true in all of Order, where it's like, Voldemort is back. I saw him come back. And they're like, yeah, that's what you say.
Right.
Yeah.
Perception is a little reality.
Yes. Perception is reality. I think I wrote down that exact. Yeah, right there. Perception
look,
is reality.
Look at you go. Look there at you go. Same exact brain. Sharing the brain cell tonight. Okay. So then what Dumbledore says, of course, is what we need is more time.
Mm-hmm.
To which Hermione is maybe like, oh.
Oh, I get it.
I know what we're up to. Good plan. Good plan. Dumbledore is like, now pay attention. Sirius is locked in Professor Flitwick's office on the 7th floor, 13th window to the right of the West Tower. To which, okay, talk about questions that make for great trivia questions.
Oh, no.
This one.
What are you doing?
I know.
What are you doing?
Can you remember all of those details? For one, it's always the number 7.
Yep.
And when it's not 7...
It's 13.
It's 13.
This is a great example of that.
It is a great...
Flitwick's office.
Yes.
7th floor, 13th window.
Yes.
From the right.
From the right.
Yeah.
West Tower.
West Tower. Oh, gosh. Yeah. West Tower. That's what would get me.
I know.
That's what would get me.
But the East Tower?
Ugh. I wouldn't even remember. I'd just be like, that's all you needed was that information.
Right.
Let's see. And then he tells him you'll be able to save more than one innocent life. Okay. This is Dumbledore's turn to be super vague because they're about to like flip the time turner and get back. And Hermione's like, I don't know what he wants us to do. And you're like, that's a pretty good point.
You yeah. know? Yeah. I mean.
Like, he's like, let me be very clear about this. Here are exact numbers, but not instructions. like, why isn't it like, you know, he should definitely just say he's going to be locked in Professor Flitwick's office on the 7th floor, 13th window from the right of the West Tower. I need you to save Buckbeak, fly him up to Sirius.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Like, It's a good thing that Harry and Dumbledore operate on a very similar wavelength because Harry will suss this plan out.
Yes.
But you're absolutely right. It's like, Dumbledore, it only would have taken you one more breath to say that.
Yeah. Like, you don't need to do that. For that matter, I don't know why Dumbledore doesn't just go with them. You know?
Also
you know
true.
What I mean?
Jay, it's a learning opportunity.
I mean, that it is, and learn they do. But, like, also, to... Like, innocent lives are at stake. And this is a lot of faith to put in Harry and Hermione. And, like, you know, it pays off, but it does seem like you're there, dude.
You're there.
You know, why don't you go with them?
Jay, it's fine. Harry's the chosen one. He's got this. he's the main character. He can't fail.
He can't fail. Yeah. Exactly. He's got plot armor.
Yeah. He's got plot armor. But, yeah, so then the thing that he says, though, is you must not be seen. You know what's at stake. You must not be seen. And this is like one of those details where I'm like, they can't be seen because they already weren't.
I know. Exactly.
Right?
This kind of logic is so, like, Hermione's going to say something in a couple minutes where it's like, oh, people have, like, killed their past selves. And I'm like, I don't know if that's possible.
I agree.
Because if you went back and killed your present self, then
you never
present self would have died and wouldn't have been able to go in the past.
Exactly.
So that's not possible.
It's not possible.
You can't do that.
No.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So... let's see here. But then Dumbledore is very clever about it because he is like, I'm going to lock you in. We've got 5 minutes till midnight.
Why does he lock the doors?
Well, I think he locks the doors because that comes back up later and they're like, well, they couldn't have gone. They've been locked in the whole time.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think that's
like,
it.
So what's going to happen though is that Harry and Hermione are going to like flip out of this room and then they need to be back in that room, but they're going to be locked out. So how do they get back in?
Kick in the door,
I guess. Aloha Mora. Yeah.
That one comes back.
That's
later
the
too.
Other one, too. I'm going to lock you in. Yeah, good. There's not like a first grade spell to get through that.
Right?
Yeah, right. They've been locked in the whole time. I don't know what they're going to done.
It's like, Dumbledore, you know, like everybody else, that we teach them Aloha Mora first year, first semester.
Yeah, right. Like, they got it. Locking
they got that
stuff,
one, yeah.
Not a big deal. Well, I don't even have lots of noise.
3 turns should do it, though, so that's going to take us back 3 hours.
Yeah, and here we go.
This is where Hermione does... actually, this is kind of fun. On our copy of the book, we are officially on page 394.
Yes, we are! So fun, so fun. When the final secret is revealed that Hermione has had the time turner the entire time. And this is how she's been getting to class.
Yes, yes. So this for Harry is sort of like a big moment of like, wait, what?
Huh?
Wait, what?
Yeah, this is another thing Dumbledore could have said, like, you know, like, Hermione, I need you to use the time turner to travel back in time. Harry, she'll explain. You know,
everything's going to be fine. You got this. Not to worry. Yep. So basically, Hermione, without really telling him everything that's going on, she's just sort of like pulls it out, you know, 3 times over. Harry has the sensation that he was flying very fast backwards. This is like one of those things where I feel like the descriptions for like traveling through a portkey, traveling through apparition, traveling through flu powder, and traveling through time all kind of seem like they live in a very similar like camp.
Similar camp. Like, this one's, like, rushing backwards. Apparitions, like, through a tube.
Right.
Yeah. What is it?
Is one port of them through the belly, like, button?
What, port key sounds like you've got, like, something, like, hooked through your navel.
Your navel. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds so miserable.
Yeah. And then flu powder's just, like, the tilt-a-whirl, you know?
Yeah. Don't get motion sick.
Just spin. Yeah. Don't get motion sick. Okay. This is what I don't know what you make of this.
Okay.
So, they're standing in the hospital wing.
Yes.
Flip the time turner, and then they land in the entrance hall.
Don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure why.
Seems like they should be right back where they were, right?
It seems like they should be exactly where they are.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I think is kind of odd, speaking of things that don't make any sense at all, is that immediately upon landing in the entrance hall, Hermione's like, in here. And then she takes Harry's arm and drags him across the hall to a broom closet. And I'm like, where it says, push him in inside among all the buckets and mops. And I'm like, what is this broom closet for?
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed Issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I know, but Filch, well, I mean, I guess, but it seems silly to me that wizard school with spells has mops and buckets.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because they could just magic away the dirt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Once again, just another one of those reasons where it's like,
Filch makes no sense.
Why have a non-magical person in charge of cleaning magical messes?
Also, why are they keeping mops and buckets in like the broom closet? Isn't this like, aren't brooms for like Quidditch?
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
Weird.
I know.
Yeah.
What do you call the place where you store all the Quidditch brooms?
Exactly. The locker room. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. We'll go with that. Let's see here. So then as we scoot forward, we've gone back in time, Hermione says, 3 hours back. Harry is like, are you sure about that? Gives himself a hard pinch on his own leg, to which he describes as, it hurt a lot. I'm like, Harry, you didn't have to pinch that hard. Like, I mean, I've tried to like pinch my leg to the point where it hurts a lot, and I don't think I'm capable of doing it.
Yeah.
It's like when you bite your tongue, you know, it's ugh. Like if you do it on purpose, you can't make it hurt.
Right.
But then when you do it on accident, you're like, ow.
You're like, wow. Yeah.
But I'll Harry, that's the degree to which Harry's pinching his own leg.
Yeah. This, though, when she says we've gone back in time, like, I remember reading that for the first time, like, as a kid, and just being like, no.
Time travel.
Mind blowing. Yeah. So that's really fun. Let's see. Sure, someone's coming. I think it might be us. So it's possible that I'm still trying to figure out how they ended up at the entrance hall. Like, if maybe you have like a destination in mind when you do this, if you can like teleport as well, is it like a apparition assister or something? Could you also go back in time?
Could it also like move you just a little bit?
I mean, I guess so, because it did.
Right. Yeah. Yes,
this is another in the movie. They just land in the hospital wing again. But
so does the movie actually do it more correctly?
To me, yes. Unless the time turner also lets you like move through space at the same time,
right,
as you're doing it.
I guess Hermione would be pretty well practiced at this point.
I guess so.
Speaking of that, though, so Hermione is then explaining. She's like, "It's called time turning. I've been using it all year to get to my lessons." McGonagall had to write all sorts of letters to the Ministry of Magic so that she could have one. And this is another one of those instances where it's like where we know Percy gets 12 OWLs. We know that Barty Crouch Jr. got 12 OWLs. It's like there must be some protocol attached for doing this.
Absolutely.
Hermione can't be the first person who's had one.
Oh, I know, because otherwise, like, how are they getting the 12 OWLs if they're not taking all the classes? How are they taking all the classes if they're not using a time turner?
Right.
So, yeah, I think other students have also had them at other points, and Percy high on the list.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. He's the person we know for sure. Because I guess the instance of Barty Crouch Jr. getting 12 OWLs is when Barty Crouch Sr. is like talking to a tree.
Yeah.
So it's possible that information is fallible.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But he's also pretty crafty.
He's pretty good at stuff.
Talk about thinking on your feet. Like, I know. He's got a Peter beat for sure. But so they go back and Hermione's all like, I don't understand what Dumbledore wants us to do. And it's like, that's because he didn't tell you. Yeah, like, but he could have.
Right. Harry is the one who seems to be able to put it together quickly. So Dumbledore just said that we could save more than one innocent life. And then it hit him. Hermione, we're going to save Buckbeak.
Boom.
Boom. Yeah.
This is like one of those things where it's like, it's convenient that the other version of them like didn't see it happen.
True.
You know, because if they, like, just knew Buckbeak hadn't been murdered, I guess they would have seen themselves do it.
Yes, you know? Yes. Which also is going to come up here in a few minutes when McNair, sort of, like, in a fit of rage, swings his axe into the fence.
Yeah.
And then Hagrid still wails into the night sky. And you're like, that's a convenient piece of...
Oh, I know. It's like the way in which they thought things happened.
Yes.
So, yeah. Based on that unmistakable swishing sound of the axe.
Oh, yes. I mean, you could hear it from a mile away.
I know, yeah.
People axes are wildly loud.
Very loud going through the air. Everyone knows it. Yeah. But so Hermione is trying to explain to Harry, like, on the fly, like, how it works. Like, this is 3 hours ago. We are walking down to Hagrid's. We just heard ourselves leaving. And then he's like screwing up his brain, trying to figure out, oh, my God, how is this working? Which it is a lot to take in. So,
it is.
Yeah. But he's going to master it pretty quickly.
He's pretty good with
it. Yeah, he gets it. Yeah.
Despite the amount he's going to want to interfere.
Yeah. Well, he does interfere.
Yes, he does. He does.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Yeah, so then what we see is that they're basically going down to Hagrid's. They're going in the front door. They can sort of see, like, Hagrid open the door to, like, the invisibility cloak and let everybody inside. Let's see here.
Yeah, so they realize they need to, like, sprint down so they can get behind where Buckbeak is so they can, like, steal him away at just the right moment. And Hermione brings out, like, what if anyone's looking out the window? And it's like, hey, I love Harry here. It's just like, nothing we can do about it. We just got to go for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really fun. And then, although I love this random detail that gets included just for, like, accuracy's sake, I guess, is that they run for it and they do make it to the shelter of the forest. And then it says, Harry turned around. Seconds later, Hermione arrived beside him, panting. So, just in case you were wondering, yeah, Harry's a lot faster than Hermione. Yeah.
Harry can win in a foot race.
Yeah, he got several seconds ahead of her.
Yes, yes. How far of a distance are we talking?
I don't know. But, like, man, like, Harry, he's quick.
He's quick. Quick.
Yeah, he's out
there.
He's
a speedy boy.
Yeah. No wonder Hermione was so concerned that someone might be looking out the window. My goodness. Yeah. Bringing up the rear. But they see themselves go into Hagrid's cabin. Harry is just like, this is just the weirdest thing we've ever done. Which is, I guess, true, but they've done some pretty weird things.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yep. But now is when Hermione is kind of thinking on her feet, because Harry's basically like, now should we go and do it? And Hermione's like, no, if we steal him now, then the committee people will still think that Hagrid set him free.
Yeah, we've got to wait until they've seen he's tied outside, which is, like, really good foresight. on Hermione's part, but also, like, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen.
Also, I'm just kind of curious, at any point in time throughout this entire year, if Hagrid had set Buckbeak free, what would have happened to Hagrid?
Oh, I know, right?
Like, would he have been, like, detained? Is the only thing that keeps Hagrid safe the fact that, like, they know he couldn't have been involved because he was inside when he got away?
I guess so.
Because that's, it's like a very, like, things work out rather swimmingly.
They sure do. They sure do. But so they say it's going to give us about 60 seconds. So they're going to have like 1 minute, which, I mean, that sounds like not a lot of time, but that's, I feel like it's a lot of time.
I know. Yeah. This is one thing that I actually like that the movie does, though, because it's the next thing that shows up, is at that moment, there was a crash of breaking china from inside Hagrid's cabin. Inside of Hagrid's cabin, what's happening is like he's just shaking out of like such... like, you know, stress because yes. of what's about to go down, that he's like basically just accidentally drops the teapot or whatever. In the movies, this is where they actually like have, I think it's like Hermione, throw the stone from outside
of
the cabin.
Yeah, like the snail insignia on it or something.
Yeah, like the little like fossilized rock. This is one of those where it's like I almost want like, I like the idea where it's like, oh my gosh, we're not leaving. We need to alert what's going on inside. So they throw the rock and then it crashes the thing. So in real time, you think Hagrid broke it because he was shaking so badly. But what actually happens is the rock flies in through the window and
right,
shatters
from
it.
Them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But then Harry does a lot of good like questions for the audience here, where he's like, what if we just run in there and grab Pettigrew?
I literally wrote, someone had to ask.
I know, exactly. It's like, I have to put this question in here so that no one asks the obvious things.
Yes, yeah. yep.
Yeah, and then Hermione just sits there and says, you know, it's against wizarding law. Nobody's supposed to chain time. Nobody. And it's like, also because you really can't, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. But, what do you think you'd do if you saw yourself bursting into Hagrid's house? Yeah. I'd think I'd gone mad. And then she's like, Professor McGonagall told me what awful things have happened to people that wizards that meddle with time. Loads of them ended up killing their past selves. And yeah, we already talked about this, but it's just, I literally wrote the note right here. It says, I'm not sure that this is actually possible.
I don't think it is either. I think it's just what you tell the people using the time turners, like just to make sure they're following the rules.
Yes. And yeah. So maybe that's like part of the adherence, is that you take it so seriously that you can't interact, which means you never interacted, but you can't in the first place. So.
Right. Because you would have, and then you would, yeah. So,
yeah. It's like a paradox.
It is. It's like a bit of, and also the thing is, she's like, what do you think you do if you saw yourself bursting into Hagrid's house, said Hermione. It's like, well, Harry might be confused, but what would Hermione do if she saw herself breaking in? Because, like, she would immediately know, like, oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? She'd probably, hey, guys, it's okay. I know what's going on, I think. Other Hermione, am I right? And her other Hermione would be like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right. It was the time turner. Yeah. He's like, what do we need to do? Like, that rat is Peter Pettigrew. What?
What? No. Give that me can't rat. Be.
Yeah.
And then Ron would be like, no, it's just Scabbers.
It's just Scabbers. Look, Ron, seriously, give me the rat.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That would have been great. So, yeah, I don't think that is quite possible for them to do, for them to actually kill. But it's good for you, the audience, to sort of have more information about how time travel is going to work. But so a little bit more time passes. They watch themselves exit, which is kind of fun how they see it. They just watch the grass flattening because they're all under the invisibility cloak.
Yes, I do like that visual. Yeah. I like that visual. Yeah,
that's very fun.
And at the same time, basically everybody from the ministry, Dumbledore, McNair, all go into Hagrid's hut, where they start basically being like, okay, so we have to handle this official business. Like, we have to read you the official notice of execution. Hagrid, I'll make it quick. And then you and McNair need to sign it. McNair, you're supposed to listen to. That's procedure. So yeah. It's like you're supposed to listen to. That's procedure. It's like, what else would he be doing?
I know. Like, why is he even there?
He's just got like one of those like paddle balls.
Yeah. Like,
McNair, are you with us? I'm like, I'm setting a record.
I'm here. I'm doing a thing over here. I got a personal best.
Right.
Yeah. Also, this. Okay. So this is the point where I feel like we've talked about this a little. In maybe some of the other shows that you guys haven't seen yet. But I think Dumbledore starts to clue in that something is the foot.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, he obviously doesn't know anything is going on at this point, but he's going to say a couple of things here that really make it seem like he is, like, at least aware of shenanigans happening.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing that happens, like, very conveniently, per their plan, McNair's face appeared at Hagrid's window staring out at Buckbeak. So there you go. McNair has confirmed Buckbeak is here.
Okay, and so then he turns put his paddle ball down.
Yeah, put his paddle ball down. There he is. Oh, got to go listen to procedure. Turns around. Now the window is open for them to go steal Buckbeak away from them. And then I love this. I love when Fudge is reading the decree, though, because he says... it is the decision of the committee for the disposal of dangerous creatures that the hippogriff Buckbeak, hereafter called the Condemned, which I just crossed out and wrote hereafter called Witherwings.
I wrote the exact same thing. Oh, that's so good.
But never once will Buckbeak referred to as Witherwings without the reminder that it's actually Buckbeak.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Witherwings.
Yeah. Witherwings, yeah. Because they're always afraid that we, the audience, are going to be like, who's Witherwings?
Who's Witherwings? Oh, I forgot about Buckbeak. Who's this hippogriff?
It's the worst code name literally ever.
Literally the worst code name ever. Also, it just feels like you could have just renamed him anyway. Be like, I don't know, have a Buckbeak who? This is Witherwings. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's a different
Draco, book. Could you point it out with 100% certainty which one it is? No, you can't? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Should have paid more attention and care about the
creatures. Yeah. Okay, well, who knows? Anyway, so then we also get a little bit more introduced to McNair. We get his name, Walden McNair. He is a Death Eater, which we eventually learn, although we don't know it yet.
Yep.
Let's see. And then this is also interesting. They're reading the procedure, and they say, as witness below, Hagrid, you sign here. I'm like, well, what if he just didn't, you know? Like, nah, I'm not going to.
I refuse. Yes.
Like, no, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do?
Right. But so then this is the moment where I think Dumbledore sort of like starts stalling.
Yeah,
maybe
a little.
In real time because they're like.
It feels like it.
Yeah, like, let's get this over with. Hagrid, perhaps it's better you stay inside. No, I want to be with him, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like, Harry's outside being like, Buckbeak, move. Like, they're coming.
Yeah.
And then, like, literally, like, right as they're about to step outside, Dumbledore's like, one moment, please, McNair. You need to sign, too.
Yes.
And it's like, all right, okay, we just bought ourselves an extra 12 seconds. Excellent.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what Harry needs. And finally, they're able to get Buckbeak into a grudging trot, and they reach the trees where Harry looks over a shoulder, and they were now blocked from sight, so nice and safe.
Okay, yeah. So going back to Dumbledore, though, because you might like be wondering, like, how could he possibly know at this moment that, like, something's going on? Because, like, we know that Dumbledore knows that Buckbeak is innocent. So certainly... he wants Buckbeak to be saved.
Right.
Right. And so Lupin, when he showed up at the shack a couple chapters ago, was like, I was staring at the map because I thought Harry, Ron, and Hermione might head down to Hagrid's because of the Hippogriff trial.
Right.
So it stands to reason to me that Dumbledore might have assumed the same thing. Like, Harry, Ron, and Hermione might have gone down to Hagrid's because of the Buckbeak trial.
Right.
Right. Dumbledore knows that, like, he can't do anything about it. But he goes down there, doesn't see him, which probably is like, well, they're here anyway, even if I can't see him.
Right.
You know, he knows what's up. He doesn't, like, at this point in his personal timeline, he doesn't know about the time turn. He hasn't set anything into motion. But it's like, I feel like he knows that something, he's like, I'm going to have an interesting night. Something's going on here.
He puts his, like, thumbs inside of his, like, suspender straps, and he's like, yeah.
He's like, oh, it's one of these nights.
It's one of these nights.
Yeah.
Interesting things are the foot.
I know. So, like, because, like, he starts distracting McNair, and it's like, he's like, yeah, maybe he knows something else is out there. But then I feel like he's like, maybe this is him testing the waters, and then, hey, what's up, dude?
How about that?
We'll come back to it in a second after they get Buckbeak here. Yeah, so they get Buckbeak. McNair runs out just furious. It was tied here. I saw it just here. And it says, how extraordinary, said Dumbledore. There was a note of amusement in his voice. And he's just like, well, what do you know?
It worked.
He's like, this to me, Dumbledore is just like, oh yeah, it's going to be an interesting night.
Yes.
Things are happening. I don't know what's going to go. Something's going to happen. Like, that time turner is going to come into play. Because he knows about the time turner too.
He does. Yeah. He does. Yes. Yes. So he's like, it's going to be, whimsy is about to happen.
Yeah. Because he doesn't sound surprised. He's like, would you look at that? The hippogriff got away.
Who knew?
Shocking.
Who knew?
Shocking. Anyway, do you want to go have some brandy?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
A lot
a large
brandy.
Right.
Dumbledore's like, let's have to drink. Yeah.
So then Hagrid's like yelling into the night, gone, gone. Bless this little Beaky's gone. Must have pulled himself free. Beaky, you clever boy.
Yeah.
And then McNair's all upset and he's like, someone untied them. We should search the grounds, the forest. McNair, if Buckbeak had indeed been stolen, do you really think the thief would have led him away on foot? Said Dumbledore. And I'm like, yeah, he totally knows.
Yeah, he knows.
They definitely took him away on foot.
Yeah.
Search the skies if you need to.
Yeah, and then he's like, Hagrid, I could do with a cup of tea or a large brandy.
Yes.
Yeah, it seemed like different drinks to me. Yeah. One or the other, whatever you've got, whatever you want, probably the brandy.
Right.
Yeah, big one. Let's see, so then they got to wait until Sirius is basically taken up to the window so that they can go rescue him.
Yes.
And they recognize that, oh, this is going to be difficult. And like, yes, duh. And then what happens here? Ron, they eventually come back out of the cabin. Scabbers breaks away. Ron starts chasing him. Let's see. This is where Sirius comes in, bowls Harry over, which I'm still surprised that he does.
I know, yeah. So basically what this is referencing back to is that in the original Harry timeline, when Sirius is like sees Wormtail out in the open, he just comes sprinting across the field and accidentally hits Harry really hard.
Yeah.
To the point where Harry's like, I think I broke a rib.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like Sirius, you're normally pretty good as a dog. And in that moment, we were supposed to think you were being suspicious, and that did make it seem a little suspicious.
It didn't help.
Yeah. So I don't know what you were up to. That's bad. That's a rare piece of bad aim for Sirius.
Yep. There we go. And then this is like very clever because you don't really know what was necessarily happening by the tree the entire time, and like there is just a parade of people traveling between the castle and the tree and Hagrid's place that are stopping Harry and Hermione from interfering at all.
Yes. And it's very cleverly written that way because it's like they want to be doing stuff, and yet it's like every single time they're about to, someone else comes sprinting from the castle,
sprinting
in the exact same direction. It's just sort of like, well, there goes them and them and them.
Yep. Yep. Then this to me is hilarious. Harry recognizes a real big problem, and so it's basically after everyone goes down into the Whomping Willow, that's when Dumbledore, McNair, and Fudge and the old committee member start making their way up to the castle. Hermione says, "If only Dumbledore had come with us." Which I'm like, "Yeah, I bet you're wishing that also about the Time Turner about now."
Yeah.
Not just through the Whomping Willow. But then Lupin comes sprinting down, doesn't see the invisibility cloak, just pokes the tree and gets it. Oh, it makes the note that clouds are obscuring the moon completely, which to me it's like, doesn't seem like it should matter, right? Full moon is out.
Yes.
Right?
Based on the way that these chapters read, lycanthropy doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
Right.
It's like hey, if it's not cloudy on a full moon, just don't go outside. You'll be fine.
Just stay inside.
Yeah.
Just stay in a windowless room on the night in question, and you're good.
And you're good. Right? And you know what? If it's cloudy, go to a picnic.
Right.
Enjoy yourself.
Doesn't even matter. Overcast is safe. This is a single cloud blocking the moon.
This is 100% a situation where it's like, I really, really, really want Lupin to be able to be in the Shrieking Shack. And there's no way to have what happens next not happen without it being a problem earlier. So clouds!
Clouds. Yeah. Clouds don't matter. But it seems like, if you need to be struck by the full moon, then just don't go outside.
Just don't go outside.
Just don't go outside.
It's a manageable thing.
It seems so much easier. Like, why are you going outside every month? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, if only he grabbed the cloak, said Harry. It's just lying there. And then, Hermione says, you can't do it because, Snape's going to be there. I don't like Hermione's reasoning. She says, if I just dashed out right now and grabbed it, Snape'd never be able to get it. And Hermione's answer is, Harry, he mustn't be seen. And I'm like, Hermione, he's getting an invisibility cloak. He won't be seen.
Invisible.
They are so bad at using that cloak.
They are really bad at it.
It just drives me crazy. They forget what it can do all the time.
If we ever go to wizard school, we're gonna be so good.
We're gonna be so good at wizard school, dude.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait.
One day we'll get our letter.
One day.
It's coming.
One of these days. Yeah.
Anyway, let's see here. So, yeah, then you continue to see the parade. You see Hagrid going up there, who has... Clearly they went for the brandy, because it seems like Hagrid's already drunk.
He's singing at the top of his voice.
Yes.
He is boisterous right now. And then this is another one where Hermione's like... Where, like, Harry was ready to just burst out and go do something, and... Hermione's like, see what would have happened? And I'm like, what would have happened if Hagrid saw you?
Yeah.
Nothing?
Hagrid, like, wouldn't know that this is the second you.
I know. He would just think it's regular you.
Yeah. Right? Like, Harry, what are you doing still out? Go back to the castle.
Right.
Sirius Black. Danger.
Danger.
What happened to the cloak? Where's Ron and Hermione? Oh, yeah. There you are, Hermione. How's it going?
Yeah. They could even just be like, we saved Buckbeak. It was us. Don't worry. We got your back.
And then they give each other a high five.
I can't believe Hagrid doesn't think that's what happened anyway.
I know.
Like, he just let them out the back.
Right. Yeah.
McNair's like, someone let them free. And he's like, he flew away.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
How weird.
Come on, Hagrid.
Oh, man. So, okay, so let's keep cruising here. So, Snape then eventually comes down. He uses the same long branch that Lupin used to also freeze the Whomping Willow. And then at this point in time, they just have to sit and wait for a while until everybody comes back up. And at this time is when we kind of get a big conversation between Harry and Hermione, where Hermione's like, Harry, there's something I don't understand. Why didn't the Dementors get Sirius? I remember them coming, and then I think I passed out. There were so many of them. And this is where Harry's sort of like, yeah, this is something I kind of wanted to talk to you about. And basically remembering the large silver something that had come galloping across the lake and forced the Dementors to retreat.
Yep.
And he's like, you know, there's only one thing that it could have been. Again, something that Snape probably should have been able to come to the same conclusion.
I know.
But
because we know he can cast one.
Because we know we can cast one, yes. Yeah. A real Patronus, a powerful one. And Hermione's like, but who could have conjured it? And this is like one of those moments where it's just like, you feel for Harry so hard.
I know. It's so sad. He said he knew who he thought it had been, but how could it have been? And it's like, it is so sad because like, especially the first time you read it, it is very easy to get on Harry's side. It's like, well, yeah, Peter we thought was dead, but he wasn't.
Yep.
And Lupin turned out to be a werewolf. That was kind of a shock.
We thought
Sirius was a bad guy. That wasn't there. That's like 3 out of 4 right now. Like, is it possible?
Right.
Yeah.
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 And so, of course, what we're alluding to is the fact that Harry thinks he saw his dad.
I know.
And so this is so heartbreaking because, like, you can only imagine, like, this is something you would never grip with. This is never something you would think like, well, maybe I would still get to see him someday. Like, maybe that could still happen. But the night's been so weird, and it's such a strange situation. And, I mean, maybe at this point in time, Harry should be piecing together, like, I guess it could have been me. Because, right. You know, obviously, you know, there are two of him out in the night.
Right, yeah. He hasn't quite figured it out just yet. But I do like the setup, though, that Hermione says, but it must have been a really powerful wizard to drive all those Dementors away. Because, like, if you tell Harry after the fact that you're a really powerful wizard for having done that, it's sort of like, well, you're just saying that.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, now he's getting the setup. Now, like, not only Harry, but you, the reader, are getting the setup that whoever did it, whoever we're going to find out did it, is a really powerful wizard.
Yes.
Like, you know it going in.
Yes.
And so then it's like a surprise that it's Harry. Because, like, when it says it here, you're not thinking that it's Harry because you don't think of him as a really powerful wizard yet.
At least not yet. I did highlight that, though, and I was like, he is.
He is.
He is a really powerful wizard.
Yeah, he's very good.
But yeah, then Hermione's like, could you see? And Harry's like, yeah, I saw. And he's like, I think it was my dad.
Yeah. I know. And then, yeah, the line from Hermione, she's gazing at him with a mixture of alarm and pity. And it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's sad.
To which she's like, but Harry, your dad's dead.
Yeah. And then she's like trying to, like, still help him out. Like, credit to her. She's like, maybe his ghost or something. And he's like, no, I don't know. He looks solid. But yeah, but from what I can see, it looked like him. I've got photos of him, which is funny to me because, like, oh, it's not funny. It's just means, like, it's cool that, like, what's actually happening is that, like, Harry is seeing himself in his dad.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Which is really cool because it's like, that's a hard thing for anybody to see in themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, usually that perspective has to come from somebody who knows both people. And in this case, Harry is like, actually seeing his dad in him, or him and his dad. Yeah.
Right.
So let's see here. But yeah, then the book even asked the question, was it possible that his father had done the same? Is it possible that all four marauders had been out on the Hogwarts ground that night?
Oh, man. It certainly feels possible when the question is posed to you.
Right.
Yep. Let's see. So then they're sitting there at last over an hour, like chilling.
What do you think they talked about?
I don't know.
Just like some rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. Should we go?
Yeah. All right. You ready?
Ready?
All right. Rock, paper, scissors,
shoot.
Oh. Come on. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Can't win for losing.
Oh, man. Let's see. So everyone starts reemerging from the castle. Harry is starting. His heart is beating fast. He's getting things are about to happen. And then it's at any moment now the cloud is going to move aside, show the moon. Doesn't feel like it should matter, but it does. I guess this is how it works. And Harry brings up the big question, what if we just go get Pettigrew right now? And Hermione's like, how are you going to find a rat in the dark? And I'm like, I don't know. You've got Buckbeak with you for one thing. Maybe he'd be a little better at it than you.
I know. Yeah. It's like Buckbeak, ferret. Go,
right, yeah, get that rat, right? Also, you sort of know where he's going to go, so you could, that might help.
That could help.
That could help.
Just station yourselves real close, but, just out of sight.
Just out of sight.
Yeah, you must have some advantages here.
Yeah, but they don't. They don't do that. Not to interfere.
Right.
Lupin, that's so interesting. Hermione is like, no, don't interfere. And it's like, but you came back to interfere, didn't you?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah, so they do get Buckbeak back over to Hagrid's.
I think also, let's not skip over this, because they're sitting there for an hour doing nothing. But then once the werewolf stuff starts happening, Harry has to realize, Lupin's going to run straight at us.
Oh, yes, yes.
They didn't realize this the entire time they're waiting.
And we really just killed that last hour playing rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. Man, we really should have moved.
We could have done it the whole time.
Yeah.
It does make me happy, though. They do get back over to Hagrid's, which is a good way to separate Hermione from Harry for the scene that is about to go down.
Yep.
I like this little moment where Buckbeak seems happy to be back inside of Hagrid's house.
Yeah.
He lays down in front of the fire, folds his wings contentedly, and seemed ready for a good nap.
Yeah.
You and me both, buddy.
Let's see. They get inside. That was really close. And then Harry comes up with a very good point. He says, I think I better go back outside again. I can't see what's going on. We won't know when it's time. It says, Hermione looked up. Her expression was suspicious. It's like, what are you suspicious of? That's a genuine concern.
Yes.
You know,
this one just seems kind of reasonable.
Yeah.
So they hear the yelping in the distance, which of course is going to be sort of the situation between Sirius and Lupin. This is going to be, oh no, Elder Wand down.
My bad. Here we go.
We're covered.
We're good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Let's see here. So yeah, so we hear the yelping in the distance, which is actually the Dementors are closing in on Sirius, rather, not the fight between him and Lupin. And at this point, Harry is sort of staring out at the lake, and he's kind of like, okay, this is the moment. Whoever sent that Patronus is about to appear.
Right.
But he's keeping in the back of his mind, you must not be seen. He wanted to do the seeing. He had to know.
Yeah. You can just feel if there's any possibility that my dad is here right now, I can't miss it. I can't miss it.
Yes. I'm seeing this through.
I'm seeing it. Yep. I will mess up all the laws of time right now.
Right. Especially because if it meant that who you thought to be your dad being dead for the past 12 years, it's that's worth it.
That's worth it.
Yeah.
I know.
You have to take that chance.
Yeah.
Then he sees the Dementors. They are emerging out of the darkness from every direction, gliding around the edges of the lake. Harry began to run. He had no thought in his head except, father, if it was him, if it really was him, he had to know.
Oh, I know. And then it says that it's a terrified excitement shot through him. And it's oh, that's such a tragic feeling too.
Yes.
He's afraid of what's about to happen, but so excited about maybe seeing his dad right there. He even says it out loud. He says, "Where are you, dad?" And I was like, oh my God.
That's one of those where I can't even like, I will, like, immediately mist over if I, like, think about the idea of, like, my daughter Addie saying, like, where are you, Dad? It's like, I can't do it.
I know. I saw that line. I was like, oh, he says it out loud. That's
so... No, not good. It was time for the rescuer to appear, and this is sort of, like, the moment where it hits him. He hadn't seen his father. He had seen himself.
Oh, I know. A very powerful wizard.
He flies out from behind the bush he's hiding behind, pulls out his wand, and screams into the night, Expecto Patronum!
Epic. Love it.
Chills. Anybody else? Chills.
Yeah. Right, cool. Yeah. Good moment. Oh.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very good. And then a blinding, dazzling silver animal erupts out of his wand. It looked like a horse. It was galloping. Let's see. So, okay, we talked about this last night so how to get rid of Dementors.
Yeah.
So wizards basically only have one defense, is that they can cast a Patronus to do it. But it's always described as shining so bright. And like even Harry, when he sees it the first time when he's passed out, he's like, it looked like a unicorn.
Right.
Right? Okay, so my question is, is it possible? Could a unicorn also fight off a Dementor?
I they're so pure of spirit.
Right.
Like they almost seem like the otherwise like physiological embodiment of a Patronus.
Yeah. Seems like it feels like that. It's like, and like their blood like stops death. Dementors are like sucking out your soul. I don't know. It seems like it's possible that they could also fight off a Dementor. The problem is it's like most wizards don't just have access to a unicorn.
Man, I know.
Yeah.
I say it all the time. We should really keep them with us at all
times.
Keep
your unicorns with you.
Yes.
You
know? Keep your enemies close, but keep your unicorns closer.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So, I don't know. It feels possible. I feel like that's a video coming soon.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But it's not a unicorn. It was a stag. And this is like what the shape of Harry's Patronus is like a mystery that is kept until this exact moment. And I have to tell you that here, I don't know about you guys, but when I first read it was a stag as a young kid, I had no idea what that was.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like a stag.
A stag, a what?
What is that?
What does that mean?
Yes. Yeah, I know.
A buck.
It's a deer.
It's a deer. Yeah.
But this, actually, I think this line in particular is really amazing because it folds all the Marauders. Well, it folds Sirius, Lupin, and James all into one. It says, it was a stag. It was shining brightly as the moon above. And so it's kind of like, basically what Harry has just done is conjured a representation of his father who is shining as brightly as the moon, Mooney, in order to save Sirius.
Right.
So it's like, I feel like it's like a really big moment where like all the Marauders are kind of like condensed.
Yeah, the good ones.
The good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoops.
Uh-oh.
Oh, dear. Did the chair break?
Oh, yikes.
Can we get another chair?
We need another chair.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
I'm so sorry.
That was weird. There we go.
Oh, a screw.
Oh, no. There it is. Boom, yeah.
I think keep it.
I think that's yours now.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh, man. Let's see. So, Harry cast Big Patronus, the big stag. It fights off the Dementors, slowly bows its antlered head to Harry, and he realizes prongs.
Yes.
Also gives me chills there, too.
I know. It's like the final Marauder has officially arrived.
I know, because it's like, it's so funny, too, because like Harry thought it was his dad, and it's like, it wasn't my dad. But then he's like, oh, it kind of was.
It was me.
No way.
I know. I mean, it's like, when you think about like a Patronus moment, it's like, what could be more powerful?
Yeah.
You know, like that really is going, that's going to do it.
Yep.
Let's see here.
Yeah, then basically he's like, Harry comes back to get Hermione. She's like, what did you do? He said you were going to keep a lookout. You weren't going to interfere. And he's like, yeah, I lied.
Guess what? I totally did.
Guess what? I saved our lives. You're welcome, I think is what you meant to say, Hermione.
Right.
Anyway, what are you in here? Chilling with the buckbeak? Witherwings?
Witherwings?
Yeah.
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 The Condemned.
Yeah, except did anyone see you? It's like, yes, haven't you been listening? I saw me, but I thought it was my dad. It's okay. And it's like, to Harry, it all makes sense so fast. And he's like, I knew I could do it this time because I'd already done it. Does that make sense? And she's like, I don't know, maybe?
Does this work?
And she's like, I guess it does, because it did.
Because it did.
Because it did. Yeah, it's very fun. It's like, if he recognized that it was him in the moment, like, would it have still worked? Like, I guess it would have, because, I don't know, he would have done it anyway, yeah, but there wouldn't be any mystery about it.
There wouldn't be any mystery about it, and I do think a huge piece of what is powering him in that moment is the realization, like, that he's kind of, like, stepping into this, like, essence of his father.
Yeah.
So it's like, I do think that that's, like, a critical piece. So if he had just seen himself from the beginning, it's like, that's weird.
Who was posing as me?
Yeah, that's so odd.
Yeah.
What am I doing over there? Yeah, so I think it's important that it happens the way that it does. But at this point in time, Hermione is like, we've got about 45 minutes until Dumbledore locks the door to the hospital wing. We've got to rescue Sirius and get back into the ward before anybody realizes that we're missing.
Yes. So they've got, like, yeah, another 45 minutes here of waiting around, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of sitting there again, and eventually they see McNair running, I guess, to go get the Dementors, which, to me, this is sort of a weird one, because as far as McNair, the Death Eater, is concerned, Sirius is a Death Eater, right? So he seems, like, far too eager for this to happen.
Dude, he hasn't gotten his kill on the night, and he's just like, you know...
He's like, I gotta get something.
He's just rubbing his axe.
Right.
He's like... Something's going on. But you're absolutely right. Like,
yeah.
For all intents and purposes, in this moment, he should be like, oh, man.
I know.
I'm a little split on this one.
Right.
Yeah,
I guess he could blame him for, like, Voldemort falling or something.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because even Sirius brings that up, that sort of, like, the Death Eaters themselves
are
not happy with the person who double-crossed.
Right.
The double-crosser.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, anyway, I guess there's that. But I guess that means the Death Eater... But that means they know it wasn't Sirius, right? They know it's Peter. Right?
No, because they don't... I don't think that they knew who the double-crosser was in the first place.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that's a whole different conversation.
No,
Let's see here. They get on top of Buckbeak. This is just... I mean, we haven't really touched on it. There's a very important bush that has been showing up all throughout this chapter that Harry's hiding behind, he's jumping out from, they're using to step up on Buckbeak. And
yeah.
I wanted to give an honorable mention to the bush.
Oh, to the bush?
To the bush, yeah.
Bravo, bush.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, bush.
It's a good bush.
That's a good bush.
Yeah.
I like that bush. There we go. So they get on Buckbeak. I love this, too. Hermione's holding Harry very tight. He says, oh, no, I don't like this. I really don't like this. This is so funny. It's like, Hermione, you often think of as being, like, so smart that she's just good at everything.
Right.
But this is, like, one of those areas where she's not so good at it.
She's out of her comfort zone.
Out of her comfort zone here.
Yep.
Yeah, better at books.
But I do like all the descriptors we get here, because basically, like, they take off. They're gliding quietly toward the upper floors of the castle. As they sort of, like, pull up in front of the window, it's sort of described as if they're, like, sort of, like, bobbing up and down.
Yeah. Right, I love the clarifications. Yeah. They found themselves at a stop. Well, unless you counted the fact that they kept rising up and down. And I was like, I do.
Yes. Because otherwise I would have been worried that Buckbeak was just like parked in the air.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
But no, okay, I see. Yeah, we're flapping.
Exactly.
We're flapping. That,
gotta
that
get
makes
that clarification
sense.
In here.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harry spots Sirius. He says, he's there. Black looked up. Harry saw his jaw drop. He leapt from his chair, hurried to the window, and tried to open it, but it was locked. Stand back, Hermione called to him, and she took out her wand, still gripping on the back of Harry Robes with her left hand. Alohomora.
Oh, my God. I was like, are you kidding me?
Do we stand back for Alohomora?
Right? Yeah, this is a scene that, one, is way better in the movie, where she has to, like, bombada!
Yeah,
and blow up the door. That's fantastic. But also, like, are you kidding me? You just caught Sirius Black, escaped guy who escaped Azkaban, and you left a window that you can just Alohomora open?
Yeah.
Like, in the charms classroom?
Right.
Like, you know, you're not, like, afraid there's, like, a rogue wand in there, or that he could, like, break the window or anything.
Literally at all.
Literally. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. Like, to me, the fact that you didn't magically seal this window against Alohomora, that's on you guys.
I know.
That was dumb.
Yeah. But then it says that, yeah, basically he's climbing his way out of the window. It says it was very lucky he was so thin, to which I'm sort of like, you know, they're a little fast and loose throughout this book as to whether or not Sirius is a gigantic black dog or really, really thin.
Yeah, right.
You know?
I guess it doesn't matter how, what your size is as a person.
Maybe you're...
In terms of, like, what you look like as... Animal. You know, okay. Like, no matter how skinny he gets, he's still giant dog.
Right.
Right? It's like, right. Peter always turns into small rat.
Small.
You know? I guess maybe he's... I guess he turns into, like skinny rat.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or becomes skinny rat. Anyway. Okay. But I love this, though. They get too serious, and he is just, like, so excited to see them. But before he even escapes, he has, like, the he like has to ask, like, what happened to the other boy, Ron? And I'm like, oh, look at this. It's so nice that Sirius is asking about Ron here, because like friendship as like a force against evil has been on extreme display in the past couple of chapters. And it's right here again. Like Sirius is like about to escape, and it's like in the midst of escaping, he's like, but what about Ron?
What about Ron? Is he okay?
He good? Yeah. Kid with the rat?
Yeah. Kid with the rat. I know. I wrote the exact same down. I love that this is like Sirius's first concern, and then Harry's like, he's gonna be okay. Madame Prophecy says she'll be able to make him better. Quick, go! And then he's like, how can I ever thank you? And Harry's like, go! And you know, he says, we'll see each other again. You are truly your father's son, Harry. Oh,
the highest of compliments.
I know. It's huge. And then he basically squeezed Buckbeak by his sides. Harry and Hermione jumped back as the enormous wings rose once more. The hippogriff took off into the air. He and his rider became smaller and smaller as Harry gazed after them. Then a cloud drifted across the moon.
You have to assume Lupin untransformed.
And they were gone.
This is almost the exact same way the chapter, or when Charlie's friends take Norbert. It's almost the exact same wording. It's like, and they were gone. And that scenario, they get caught immediately afterwards.
They do indeed,
This time, escape, it's like they've grown up. It's like, oh yeah, no, we know how to get someone out of here with some flying creatures.
Exactly, yeah. We've been here before
we did it. They were gone. Boom. Sirius has escaped. End of chapter. We did it. This is a good one.
This was a good one.
Yeah.
Now this is normally the part of the evening where I would be like, hey Jay, do you have a review for us?
Yeah.
But you know, we do have a live audience in front of us, so maybe guys, if you'd let us know how'd we do.
Oh man.
I think that counts as 5 stars.
I think it's a 5-star. Yeah, I think that's 5 stars. Thank you guys so much. That was so much fun.
That was great. Oh, yes. Man. Oh my gosh. Well, we're through it. Do you want to close this out really quick?
I suppose so. Yeah, we gotta do more podcasts.
Gotta do more podcasts.
Yeah, we gotta close it out here. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for listening to Hermione's Secret. Make sure you join us next week for chapter 22, the final chapter of Prisoner of Azkaban, Owl Post, again here on Through the Gryffindor. Boom. Now we're done.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the Wizarding World right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardandcandles.com.